Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
The Andy J Podcast. The Andy J Podcast. The Andy J Podcast.
Hey, welcome to the very latest Andy J Podcast. I hope you're having an excellent week. I just wanted to tell you a little bit about today's guest. It's actually my second time of chatting to him on this show. It is the brilliant Jason Foxy Fox from SAS Who Dares Wins. And today, well, our conversation is slightly different. Previously, we have had a good old chat about him and his ethos and his life. And at the time, I believe it was last November that we spoke, we were also talking about the book that he just brought out. And he was very much drawing on his military expertise and the things that he had seen in combat and beyond. And just in his life in general, a life of resilience and toughness and achievement. He was giving us tools, almost like a life coach in his previous book. Now, today we are talking about a new show, Foxy's Fearless 48 Hours, where he spends time with a couple of celebrities, one per episode, and gets them through a mighty challenge. A little bit channeling Bear Grylls. You know, there's the Bear Grylls show where he does sort of crazy wild adventures with big celebrities, for example, Obama and so on. Well, there's a little bit of this to the series, and you can catch it now on all four. Anyway, he just so happens to have one of my all-time favourite people as one of the lead guests, Rob Delaney. And so the minute I was given the opportunity to chat to Foxy again, we got on great last time. So firstly, I want to talk to him because he's a great bloke, really good guy. And secondly, I got a chance to see the show, thought it was brilliant, and it's got Rob Delaney in. I mean, that's actually three things, a hat trick of things. So he is terrific company. I hope you'll enjoy this chat. It's insightful, it's fascinating, it's moving. There was a moment during our conversation where I found myself welling up a little bit because I'm a sensitive thing like that sometimes. So I'm just warning you, there might be a hankies out moment a little bit during the show. But as a general rule, it's just a lovely, fun, engaging chat, and he's really, really good company. Top, top man. Little note about next week, for those of you that are following, subscribing, whatever it's called these days, this pod, you'll see it land. We have the wonderful, the nation's favourite fitness legend, Mr. Joe Wicks. He's joining us on the show next week. I'm really looking forward to that. Looking forward to you hearing it too. I'm really looking forward to chatting to Joe, actually. I've no idea where the conversation's going to go yet. I know a fair bit about him now, but I just think it's one of those things where I don't really want to plan. I just want to chat and see what happens. Kind of like I did with this, frankly. I'd watched the show and I knew Foxy from before. So, look, enjoy it. This is it. The brilliant Jason Fox.
The Andy J Podcast.
I am thrilled to welcome, well, there's the return of a hero, frankly. Last year, we caught up in November last year, and we didn't just create a new nickname for him, which was Hollywood. I think we set the world on fire with a whole bunch of different ideas. He's a former Royal Marine Commando who now shouts at celebrities for a living. He's the fearless Mr. Jason Foxy Fox. How you doing, Jason?
How's it going? You all right, Andy?
I feel that I should be calling you Hollywood just because it's only me that does that.
You can call me that if you want. I quite like the name.
Yeah. Well, you seemed to approve of it last time. I felt like you were going to wear it as a badge of honour.
Yeah, I didn't. I now haven't. But it's a work in progress. I'll do it after this.
You've crushed me from the off. Well, to be fair, it's a bit difficult because you're known on screen as Foxy now, which makes it really hard to shake that.
It does, yeah. It is. But then, that's what I've been known as since I was a kid. I was called Foxy in my house. So were my other brothers. So was my dad. my granddad was called Foxy, so...
Yeah,
it was very confusing for my mum when the phone went and someone asked for Foxy. She was like, well, which one?
Which one do you want? Yeah, that's tough. I've been trying to think of celebrities that have successfully rebranded, right? And there's the one that stands out is Prince.
Yeah, he did it a few times, didn't he?
Yeah, Snoop Dogg.
So hang on, what happened with Snoop? Was he Snoop Dogg and then Snoop?
He was Snoop Doggy Dogg. He was Snoop.
Okay, yeah.
You know, he'd had a few different things, hasn't he?
Then, yeah.
And then he was just Snoop for a while. I imagine it was connected to changing with record labels, but I don't know. I haven't asked him.
Probably.
It might be a publishing rights thing. So maybe if you ever leave Channel 4 and go to, I don't know, Sky, then maybe that would be the time to reintroduce a new name. But at the moment, we've got to send that to him.
The thing is, I haven't got that worry because I'm not like attached to anyone. It just so happens that Channel 4 are nice to me.
Yeah, well, that helps. But also, cementing the Foxy name, it's only in the name of your new show, for goodness sake, Foxy's Fearless 48 Hours. We can't change that to Hollywood now, can we?
No, I'm afraid not. Sorry. It might have been a little misleading, to be fair.
I'm fighting an uphill battle, I feel, with the nickname.
You are, yeah. They're difficult. Original nicknames that you've had for a long time are difficult to shake, aren't they?
Yeah. There's not much. It's set and that's okay. We're good with it. We'll stick with Foxy. I mean, look, you and I had a really lovely chat last November when we kind of dug a little bit into your life, but I felt there was a lot we didn't get to explore. And actually, when you look at the new show, so we saw those of us who are keen that watched Rob Delaney last week, because it's there's two episodes and it's 10 p.m. Channel 4 on a Sunday night. So we still have one to go. That's Maya Jama. Or, of course, the whole series is available on all four. The two episodes in particular are available on all four. Let's start with Rob Delaney, right? Because this is a fascinating guy. Tell me the premise of the show first, then we'll talk about Rob and the specifics. What's the basis of the show? Foxy's Fearless 48 Hours.
So the basis of the show is, you can sit down and talk to people, can't you? But you never know, especially in the celebrity world, whether you're getting the real person, because it's easy to sit there and say X, Y, and Z. Whereas when you take people out of their comfort zones and push them a little bit, you do get to see the real them. It's very difficult to keep up that facade, to keep the barrier up. And also, I'm doing everything with them. It's not like I'm not there coaching them through it. I'm doing it with them. And I am also scared in certain scenarios. Not scared, but, you know, I feel fear and I know how to manage it. And so you see me on that journey. And I think that also goes, you know, very well into breaking down other people's barriers, because they realize that you're in something together and you're not on your own. So the premise is basically me and a guest going on an adventure and chatting about stuff.
Yeah.
Everyday life stuff, experiences, you know, nightmare situations or good situations, it doesn't matter either or. And just getting a feel for who that person is. And if I'm honest, it is like going on a 48-hour, it's like going on a long weekend-style holiday, but doing some crazy stuff in between.
There's definitely some crazy stuff. I thought you were going to say it was a bit like a 48-hour speed date, which was going to take a whole different tangent.
No, I'll leave that for someone else to do. It's a completely different kettle of fish.
It's a different thing, although you picked a couple of choice dates if that was the solution. What I will say, though, is that, I mean, look, we're going to talk about specifics in a moment, but what I will say is, I don't know how you feel about this, but I feel that this is the sort of most honest, most open, rawest version of you on telly we've seen. We know how kind of open you've been with Battle Scars, your book, and indeed with Life Under Fire, but not actually on screen. You know what I mean? We see you as the man in control, the man barking the orders and telling people to push through it and all that. We don't see you as the guy on edge who is having to take deep breaths and calm yourself and take a moment and all of that.
I think, you know, I watched the first step with my missus, and she was like that. Oh my God, it's just you. And I'm like, yeah, I just wanted it to be like I was actually on holiday and you get to see me as well as the real whoever it is I'm with, you know, Rob or Maya. The thing with SAS is, even though that is also me, I'm not creating a character and projecting it onto the show. Because ultimately, that is the person I was in the military. You know, whenever I was on a training team as a DS and I would take a course, I was probably like what I am, minus talking to people like utter bits and pieces of, you know, poo. I was still that sort of person that was in a position of some form of control, that had to adopt a dynamic that projected himself in a certain way. And so, you know, that is who I am given the role that I'm in. But this is more about, I think it's just real. It's a bit more real. There's no need to have a position of power, or there's no need to be projecting myself to people in a certain way, because it's two people on an adventure, basically.
Yes. Well, I think also part of it, Jason, is probably the screen time. You know, in SAS, for example, yes, of course, we're acutely aware of you, but there's also a bunch of members of Joe Public or celebrities who are going through these ordeals. It's natural that we're going to follow their character arc, whether they can get through the barriers and stuff, more than necessarily you guys that are dishing out the challenges. Whereas in Foxy's Fearless 48, that's a completely different thing. You know, you're the title subject, for goodness sake. You're setting the challenges and doing them yourself. You have more.
Well, yeah, I think it is more about the other person, but obviously there's only two of us living together, so yeah, there's a bit more of me, if anyone's interested in that.
I think there's a lot more of you. There's something that I'd like to talk to you about. So it's Rob Delaney. Anyone that saw it on Channel 4, he was on last week. If not, you've got to see this episode on all four. We'll talk Maya in a moment. But Rob is the most fascinating character. If anyone doesn't know who he is, in the show you call him an actor. He's a lot more than that. He's a stand-up comedian. He was in Hollywood movies, of course. But he's also a great writer, Catastrophe and so on, with Sharon Horgan. I mean, he's a very well-known guy. And he's sort of also well-known as being a big guy. You know, physically, the guy is tall. He's a unit, isn't he?
He is a unit. And obviously, in the show, I do intro him as an actor, and I try to, there's a little bit of fun taken there. So I don't actually mean it, but the man is an absolute genius. I mean, he wrote with, you just said her name.
Sharon Horgan.
He wrote with Sharon Catastrophe and starred in it.
Yeah.
He's written an amazing book, his biography, and he is probably one of the funniest, naturally funniest people I've ever met. And if I'm honest, I was super excited about meeting him, because I've obviously seen Catastrophe, and I also really like his character in Deadpool 2.
Yes, which is absolutely brilliant when he skydives and everything. Absolutely amazing.
Yeah.
But the fact of the matter is that there are two sort of big moments in Rob's life, two huge moments of challenge and sadness, which I don't know if you knew about. I don't want to sort of make assumptions, but lots of the people that watch Catastrophe and so on don't realise this darkness that he has in his life. And the first one, let's go through them both, because I'd like to see how they relate to you as well, Jason, because watching the show and seeing how the two of you reacted and interacted and your reactions to what he was telling you, I thought were fascinating. The first one is he talks about his alcoholism, his car crash when he was younger. He'd been heavily drinking, had a bad relationship with booze, and he had a massive car crash. And he explained to you that it was only when he came out of the car crash, the first thing he said is, did I hurt anyone? And he was so relieved he didn't. He realized he had to stop. Now, from reading and you and I chatting previously, I know that sort of depression and addiction are things that you yourself have had to face.
Yeah, it was, I mean, it was, they're different, you know, we're on different journeys, but ultimately you can draw the parallels. And when he was talking, I was like, yeah, wow, that's, but to be fair, what I will say about Rob, he's very much a human. He's really, really in touch with being a human. You know, the first thing he cares about is other people and how they, you know, even before, I'm sure he was like that before he was drinking, and that's why he came to and obviously was like, right, that is it. You know, I've done something where I could have injured and hurt someone, maybe even killed them. And so I'm going to, you know, that was his turning point. That was his moment where he was like, right, that's it. I'm making a change. But it was, you know, it's a powerful story. He's got some great stories about his, you know, AA meetings that he goes to and stuff like that as well.
Yes.
Which the thing I like about Rob is, no matter what he's talking about, he will always bring an element of light to it through, not like deliberate comedy, but he will find the funny in something to lighten the mood of a subject, if that makes sense.
Yes, it does. Yes, but I tell you what was really interesting watching it was when he was explaining it, because it's a story I'd heard before. You know, I follow him very closely. I think he's amazing. And like you, he's someone I'd love to spend 48 hours with. I think he'd be incredible company. But what was interesting is sort of in the preamble, in the build up, you know, you'd had a laugh about him being an actor and you'd set him this great big challenge because the whole show builds to this kind of horrible thing that you, you two have to do together, which I, you know, it's up to you whether you want to share it or not. But the point is you kind of almost put it on the line in the voiceover and the narrative and whatever else that he's just an actor, you know, what's he going to do? How's he going to be able to kind of dig deep and do this? I hope he can, but I don't know if he can, kind of vibe. And then the minute he started telling you about this challenge that he's had and his alcoholism and so on, I felt like you were aware that he could tap into a resilience. And it was almost like your appreciation and respect for his skill set was just suddenly transformed like that. You were just immediately like, well, hang on, so this is a guy I can connect with.
Yeah, so the way it worked was I knew who Rob was, obviously, because of his what he's been in. I didn't know an awful lot about him, so I basically tapped into a few things. I got his book, but I deliberately didn't read it before I met him because I wanted it to be me talking to him, to be an actual journey.
Yeah.
And it was so difficult, you know, when you sort of meet just before you start filming, it's so difficult for me not to ask. I wanted to ask him then, but I just had to say. So basically, when we first met, I didn't even say anything, really, because I didn't want the conversation to go where it naturally would into the exploratory side of it and me ruin what was going to be real life, me finding out. As we did, as you said, you know, he was telling me about, you know, his experiences with, you know, alcoholism and the turning point. I'm rambling a little bit, but when we were talking about what the show's about, it's about, oh, Foxy, you know, helping these people find their resilience because he has to find it himself on certain occasions and blah, blah, blah. It was only after I started to talk to Rob that I was like, I don't know what I'm going to be able to offer Rob. Do you know what I mean? I said, you know, he's a very intuitive person. He's very clever. He's very in tune with himself. And although he might be scared, he's going to be able to coach himself through these things. If anything, I was probably picking up stuff off him.
Well, there was an amazing moment where the roles were reversed, which is just before you had to jump, he used your words back on you because you'd been explaining to him about how you can control the meter around you. You control your meter environment.
I'm sure he was mocking me. I was like looking at him going, you were
uncomfortable. We don't see you uncomfortable often, and you were uncomfortable. And yeah, he used those words.
I do put myself into uncomfortable situations because I do like it. It just so happens on this show, you get to see me uncomfortable, which I think is a good thing. You know, it's good that people know that we're all human.
It sure is. Yeah, no, you framed it perfectly. it's a gripping watch. I got to say, it's a sort of buddy movie with Jeopardy, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, there is. Yeah, there's Jeopardy.
Yeah,
that's for sure.
There's plenty. There's almost too much. It has me shredding. But I mean, here's the thing: the other big revelation from Rob, which you talk about, you don't go into huge detail in the show, I think, for sensitive reasons. But he talks about the death of his son Henry, which I've heard him discuss before, and I mean, I cry every time I think about it. As a parent myself, and you're a parent, I mean, you know what, as he says to you, you know, you think about the worst thing any parent could imagine is the death of a child, their child.
Yeah.
And he's had to experience that and he's had to live through it. And I could also see as he was telling you, and he's got to the point where it's almost a matter of fact explanation, which in itself is heartbreaking.
Yeah.
And I could just see you there, and we don't see you fold often because you're physically huge, but I could see you just sort of crumbling with the sadness of it.
It is. It's a devastating story. I mean, not just his. There's obviously many like it, but to be in front of someone that is telling you, and he did go into a lot of detail. You know, the show did show a lot of restraint and respect for a good reason.
Yes,
but,
I thought so, yeah.
I mean, it's brutal, absolutely brutal. And then he talks about, you know, how he was after that, you know, for a period of time, the sort of grieving period and how dark that must have been. You know, he was still doing stand-up, which is not just during the, you know, the prolonged illness, but also afterwards. And he wrote another series of Catastrophe.
Mm.
I mean, all those things obviously play into how he puts pen to paper, probably. But it is a tough story to listen to and know that the person in front of you telling it is part of it. I mean, yeah, the resilience that man has got is unbelievable.
Yes.
Is impressive.
Yes. I mean, did you find that you learnt from him. I know that you've dealt with all sorts of horrors in your life, but as you say, that raw experience of somebody sharing something so shattering, it can only affect you.
Yeah, I think, you know, we probably all have our different interpretations on what grit and determination through hardship is, and it's always good to listen to someone else's take on it. You just learn another. You're given another tool, hopefully. If you can interpret what they're saying, there's another tool there for you to use if you wish. And I definitely got that from Rob, if that makes sense. It's difficult to really explain what I took from it, but I know that I did. And if something happens in my, you know, life that requires me to tap into a different sort of pool of resilience, I think I will definitely use Rob's for sure. His you know, the way he explained things will help me find a resilience pool, that's for sure.
Yeah, no, he's a remarkable man. So it was compelling viewing, seeing the two of you on screen together. I think you've both achieved so much in life that people can learn from and people can aspire to be like, that to see the pair of you together, even in this sort of, you know, set up thing where you're going to leap off this blooming great viaduct. I mean, you know, it was very moving. It was a much more, I sort of, in the opening credits, I sort of thought to myself, okay, all right, we get the gist. You're going to put him out of his comfort zone. You're going to make him do a jump he doesn't want to do, and maybe he will, maybe he won't. And can you get him to that point? But actually it was so much more than that. There were so many more layers to it. And it was, quality, really quality viewing. Well done, man.
Thank you very much. There's a great team behind. I've got to say, actually, it is the best thing I've been involved in, this shoot. It is so enjoyable. Like, the crew, my journey within it. I'm sure other people will say opposite to what I've said, but as far as I'm concerned, everyone was brilliant. Everyone pulled together. We had a great laugh. The weather, for some reason, was great on each time we went away to Wales, which is almost unheard of. But yeah, it was. I'm glad that you found that there was more layers to it, because that was the intention.
It was really strong. It was really strong. And then, of course, your second guest, Maya Jammer, who's, if anyone doesn't know, she's a TV presenter, she's a radio host, she's something of an influencer in terms of Instagram, big old social media following and so on. And a fascinating young lady. Big age difference between the two of you. This is the thing. There was a real contrast between your guests. You know, you and Rob were kind of similar in physique. I mean, obviously you're more toned, but nonetheless, similar in age, similar in terms of your life baggage, if that makes sense. Yeah. And then we have the much younger than you, Maya Jammer, who is a glamorous young lady. And I don't want to say too much because I'm mindful that the episode hasn't gone out yet. I'm in a privileged position of having seen it. But what I will say is that your approach to her is very different to Rob's. Whilst you go in almost respecting Rob from the outset, you don't really want to talk to Maya to start with.
Do I not?
No. It's really uncomfortable. You're in the car together and you're just silent. And we've got your voiceover narrative going, I don't know if she's going to take this seriously. This might just be something she does for Instagram. I certainly don't know if she's got the stones to draw on what she needs and all the rest of it. And you're just kind of watching the two of you kind of going, oh, I'm uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Foxy doesn't like her. It was really crazy.
No. It wasn't that. It was, I think there's probably a level of anxiety for me with regard to, I wanted her to feel comfortable, but the problem was, in my mind to begin with, was a huge age gap. Not huge, huge, but big enough.
What are you, 45? I mean, she's 28.
45. Yeah. I was 44 when we filmed that. I had my birthday the day we did that final challenge on it.
What a birthday treat.
I know. And I think she was 27. Okay. But anyway, either way, you've got the right, it's all right. But I mean, yeah, I could be a dad. And I'm not, but I could, you know, it is in the realm
that
of possibility.
That would be an exclusive, wasn't it? Hang on, we've got an announcement.
That's what we got her on for. But ultimately, I was like, well, bloody hell, she's cool. Been on TV. I have watched her on the Peter Crouch thing she did last year, which I really liked, and I really liked her on it. But ultimately, you know, I'm an ex-military guy knocking on the middle-aged category within life, and, you know, what would we have in common, and would there be a common ground for us to chat? And yeah, there was.
Yeah. I mean, you click again. I'm not going to spoil anything. Things get better, but it is frosty to start with.
Yeah, I'm always frosty, mate.
Well, that, I mean, that was the other thing that was curious, is she seemed really determined to kind of impress you, either to just talk you to death or to impress you with her resilience and the fact that she was determined to achieve.
But she is a determined character, I'll give her that.
She wanted you to say that, like, she was the celebrity who had impressed you the most. And I'm thinking to yourself, hang on, have you never watched SAS? Because there are some people on there that have an enormous journey, and comparatively, hers was, like, quite a lot easier than what some have to go through, wasn't it?
On the show or in life?
Yeah, no, on the show. I'm talking about the show, not in life.
It is different because we, do you know what, actually? So on SAS, we take them and we absolutely rinse them. They do get rinsed. But what is different about this one is obviously there's no rinsing. It's all fun. We have a great time. Yeah. We talk about serious things and we talk, as I've said before, you know, and fun stuff. But at the very beginning of each episode, I show them what they're going to be doing in 2 days' time. Now, that is complete. On SAS, they don't know anything. They turn that's up true. And they have to do it. And that's actually a better way. The amount of times I've been in the Special Forces, and when you haven't got time to think about jumping out of a plane into blackness, that is better than when you're like, oh, God, I'm waiting to do this thing. And, you know, the tension builds and whatever. Whereas for these, both Rob and Maya, you're presented with looking at from the perspective of whatever, with either climbing up or leaping off. And then it's like, right, we're coming back to this in 2 days. You better be ready. So
yeah,
I think it is mean. I did actually feel with Maya, and I'm not going to give anything too much away, but I did have later that night, I was struggling with the fact that I was like, Have I sort of bitten off a bit more here than she can chew? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, because it is mean. You're coming back to this spot to do this thing that you really don't want to do in 2 days' time, and we are doing it. It's going to constantly be on your mind.
And I'm going to do some scary things in between to get you to the right place to do this thing.
Yeah, here's a bunch of horrible things to fill your time.
Yeah. So I think the dynamic is slightly different. There's no burpees, there's no press-ups, there's no shouting, but there's just that sort of psychological horror lurking in the back of your brain.
It is, actually, when you put it like that, it's seriously mean. Yeah.
Damn it. it wasn't supposed to be mean. It's difficult to go through life without being mean.
Is it?
No, I'm joking.
No, there's the quote for the poster. It's difficult to go through life without being mean, Foxy.
Oh, my God. That's a get out of jail for loads of criminals. Right, let's ignore that.
He said it, so I'm quoting it. Yeah, it's a tough one. But two very different individuals, two very different challenges, two very different stories to tell. And yet the show has the same DNA, and that's because you're right there at the heart of it, basically on a mission to help them through it.
Yeah, it is a journey that we do together, which I love about it. You know, we are sharing the anxiety. I'm not going to lie. The Maya one, I was like, for 2 days as well, I was like, even though I presented her with what the challenge was, I've also presented it to myself, and I'm like, oh, for God's sake, why do I do this? But anyway, I do it. But I'd like to add, Maya is actually, she has had she hasn't had it easy. You know, she's in a great position now as a young woman who's successful, and she's got a business and all this sort of stuff. And yeah, you know, she grew up in quite a, you know, it wasn't a privileged sort of upbringing that she came from. And she's experienced and endured a few things that needed a bit of resilience to grip hold of.
Yes, I think she's a hugely impressive character. I thought it was great that you had her on the show. And actually, she used a phrase, and again, I'm not giving anything away. This is just a little nugget that she used, which is something we all know, and yet we don't use it as a phrase often enough. Pressure makes diamonds.
Yeah, I like the way that used to be a saying of mine, but now it's on screen for her. She's stolen it. But no, you're right.
You say things like you can't go through life without being mean to people. She says pressure make diamonds. You know, that's...
I never... Oh, here we go. Here we go. Classic twisting. But no, you're right. She did say that. And ultimately, if we look at the science, that is, you know, if you want to be a diamond person, you've got to put yourself under pressure. Yeah. So, yeah, it's true. You know, we don't develop as people without, you know, jumping off the deep end and learning how to swim. If we sat in the sun lounge all the time, we wouldn't really develop as people, to be honest. So that's it's true. Always good to step out of your comfort zone, I think.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. I mean, you'd get a heck of a tan if you just hung out in the sun lounger, but yes.
You would, but that's not always good either, is it?
No, it's not. Long term, it's got leathery skin. Yeah, no. Especially not at our age. You and I are very similar in age. So, yeah, no, it wouldn't work for us. We'd be in trouble.
We would, massively.
I mean, look, there's an idea for you, right? You've called it Foxy's Fearless 48 Hours, and yet you want to obviously reclaim that kind of that empowering thing rather than being known for telling people to be mean. Why don't you call the next, or do a book called Foxy's Diamonds, where you could profile the people that have really impressed you.
Hello, I'm Amber. I work with the team that bring you this show and the Driven Chat podcast. And we love that you're listening. It would be really cool if you could just chuck us 5 stars, subscribe and tell your friends. Thank you.
The Andy J podcast.
You could do. I might, I'll probably end up getting looked into by the fraud squad or the police for smuggling. They'll probably think it's a cover for something else. No, that's a good point.
It's an Ocean's 11 kind of vibe.
Yeah, exactly,
Now, look, last time we spoke, we talked about some of the amazing things you've done, like kayaking the Yukon River and rowing the Atlantic and all these kind of amazing things. And it occurred to me afterwards, you know what it's like once you've spoken to someone, and you must have had this with all this kind of celebrity access that you've had and the conversations you've had with these fascinating folk. After them, once they've gone, you think of things you meant to say and hang on, what about that? And wanted to ask them about that, etc. And there's something in your kind of CV that I failed to address with you last time that I always wanted to talk about, okay? And that is discovering the lost treasure of Captain Kidd.
Oh, yeah.
Because that's a really, really cool thing to do. Can you tell me about that? Because that sounds amazing.
I can. What do you want me to say?
Everything. Tell me the whole story.
So basically, I got employed by a mate of mine because I was absolutely hanging out for work. I was skint. I didn't have a job at the time, and so a good friend of mine called Aldo Kane, who works in television he sometimes is on screen. But also he does safety medic type stuff for crews that go to challenging environments. Mm. And so he knew that I was struggling because we're really good mates. And he had a load of work on and he was like, mate, I've got all this work on. I could really do with you covering for me on this job out in Madagascar. And I was like, oh, mate, I could really, really do with this. You know, thanks very much. He did the introductions. I then sort of did what I needed to do with regard to all the sort of like signing papers, blah, blah, blah. And then, I found myself out actually on an island called Île Sainte-Marie, which is a small island off Madagascar. And it was a TV show that was being filmed for the History Channel. And it was the American History Channel.
Mm. Which is actually a massive channel, to be fair. Massive.
Huge, huge. Yeah. Big time. And So basically, I went out there as the crew's medic and the underwater cameraman's dive buddy. So whenever he was filming stuff underwater, I'd be sat, you know, next to him, checking his air, doing all the stuff that he didn't have time to do, which was not a lot.
Look after himself, basically.
Yeah, because he's busy filming these basically underwater, we call them underwater archaeologists. And what they were doing, they were diving on shipwreck sites that they had worked out to be old school pirate shipwrecks. Now the job aside, the trip was so interesting because these blokes, they're all pretty much American. These blokes were experts, and when I say experts, they were experts in pirate history. And I could sit for hours at the bar listening to what they knew about it. Anyway, they'd marked out all these pirate shipwrecks. they were diving on them, and they were gently sifting silt out of the way to reveal timbers. And every now and again, they'd pick up a bit of, you know, bone china, and everyone would get excited because the last time someone had drunk out of this teacup would have been a pirate, blah, blah, blah.
That is cool.
Which is cool. And obviously, we were, me and the guy that was the underwater cameraman, were privy to all this. Now, that sounds great. After 3 weeks of doing that, you start to get a little bit bored of, you know, seeing a teacup every once in a while or a bit of wood. And I can remember me and Sam, who was the guy that was the cameraman, as well, he was actually the SP, the series producer as well. We were sat on the surface with our buoyancy aids inflated, just chatting about, okay, we should probably go back down in a minute, film a bit more stuff. And as he did that, one of the guys came up, the lead guy came up, and he was like, come up to the surface, because he needed to swim to the shore to recharge his cylinders. And he said, oh, definitely, I'm sure, he goes, I'm positive that's Captain Kidd's shipwreck, the Adventure Galley. And obviously they all knew the detail behind all of it, because they'd looked into, you know, history and worked out where it might be, where it was scuttled and all this sort of thing. Anyway, he swam over to sort himself out, and me and Sam were like, let's go down. So we went down and absolutely, basically, in a nutshell, decimated this dive site. And in the process, found, I was rummaging around through this silt, couldn't see anything. The visibility had gone because we were kicking everything up. And I ended up feeling something cold in the mud, and wrestled with it. Couldn't really wrestle it properly because it was so heavy. Sam put the camera down, came over. We moved it into position on the seabed. Then he went back to get the camera as I was clearing the immediate area of silt and mud that was floating in the water. And as he brought the camera back over, it just cleared to reveal this big lump of something that turned out to be the largest silver ingot to be found. It had stuff engraved in it like TS and whatnot. And in fact, we found that basically. And it was attributed to Captain Kidd's Adventure Galley. There was a big hoo-ha. The world media descended upon this small little island, and, you know, predominantly it was the French media mainly, because obviously Madagascar is an ex-French colony. And it all kicked off, and that was us finding pirate treasure. We got a bollocking off the guy for decimating his dive site, but then he was actually quite happy about the whole situation anyway. It has since, I will just, because there's going to be people that are like, I've read otherwise. It has since, by some people, said it was a lump of lead, but I have touched it and felt it and rubbed it, and it is not lead. I'll tell you that for nothing.
Well, you found it, for goodness sake. I have a series of follow-up questions, because this is an incredible thing. Firstly, you say you got a bit of a telling off for spoiling the dive site, but weren't they even more miffed because you found the treasure they were looking for?
Yeah, I think that's pretty much what it was. To be honest with you, when we realised what we'd done, me and Sam were like, we obviously we can't talk, we're underwater, and we were like, you could see there was a look of realization in both our eyes that, what have we done? And we started to panic, because the guy who was diving on that area is a bit of a tyrant. And so we basically threw between us this 55 kilogram ingot back into this muddy hole that we'd created, and then swam up. And as we're surfacing, this guy's going back down past us, giving us the thumbs up as if everything's hunky-dory. And we're like, yeah, all good. He then came up about, I don't know, 10 minutes later, got out. We were out of the water by this stage. We'd sort of, we'd de-serviced, de-rigged all our kit. And he came over and he was like, I want a word with you two. And he sort of, that's when he gave us that sort of miniature slaying. But
Yeah,
it all worked out for the best in the end anyway.
The fact is, you put it back, because that was going to be my next question. You know, technically, you found pirate treasure, which is probably worth a fortune, right? I mean, probably worth a fortune. Isn't it owner's keepers kind of vibe?
It isn't like that, no. Basically, UNESCO came in. They sectioned the whole area off and said it's now protected. Whatever that means, I don't know. Because basically what it means is, if you abide by the rules, it's protected. If you're a criminal, feel free to come here because it's a place of interest. And you can, so they don't, it's not like they have armed guards protecting it. But anyway, they turned up, basically cordoned the area off, you know, with regard to bureaucracy, and that was the end of that. And you, we weren't there to sort of like take stuff away from the it was given to the nation. Apparently, I don't know, but there's rumour has it it's a paperweight on the president's desk or something stupid like that. Oh,
it was
which was super exciting. And there's a whole, you know, all the stories about those pirates that you, because basically that island was used as a Ile Saint Marie was used as a pirate safe haven back in the golden age of the pirates. So they all were there. It was like there was a little island in the middle of the lagoon called Pirate Island, and there was debauched parties would go on there. There was a French pirate called Le Bouge who ran it. He was like king of the pirates, and there was a code of conduct. Like, honestly, this is all stuff I learned from sitting with these guys over a few beers on a desert island, which was an amazing, it was mental, an amazing experience.
I absolutely love this. My last question about Captain Kidd, because I'm absolutely fascinated, Jason, and this is because you don't meet many people that have discovered pirate treasure, right? Which you must be aware you've done something dangerously cool. Did you, have you received any sort of pirate curse since this has happened?
I haven't, no. Actually, that job was what led me to get the SAS job. So if anything, it's like a blessing, not a curse.
Yeah.
So far.
Well, I mean, you should mark it with a pirate tattoo of some description.
Do you know what? I keep meaning to do that, and I haven't got round to doing it. And now you've said it, I'm going to go and get it done.
Brilliant.
It's something that I've kept wanting to do, get a pirate tattoo, and I've never, I don't know what of yet.
Isn't it? Like, Captain Kidd must have had some kind of special flag, or there must be some kind of image that's connected to Captain Kidd, right? So surely you've got to get a connection, like in your tattoo somehow.
Exactly. Yeah. I don't know. I'll work it out. Because Kidd got hung not far from where I live in Clapham. He got hung in Wapping.
That's nuts.
I don't know. Maybe I could get a tattoo of the noose. I don't know.
Oh, that's a bit dark.
Maybe that's a bit too dark. Yeah. Sorry. Yeah. I apologise to the listeners. going into a weird place.
I mean, of all the pirate things, you go with a noose. I mean, there's so many choices you could have. I think that probably says something about you. I'm not a psychoanalyst, but, you know, going down the
I suppose I see what you're saying, actually. That was, I've let myself down again there. Anyway.
it's another one. We've stacked it, but it's all good because the end result is you're going to get an absolutely awesome tattoo out of it. You know, you didn't get the multi-millions that I imagine that piece of silver was worth.
I reckon if I'd have profited from that in a financial way, that's probably where the curse kicks in.
Yeah, true.
You know what I mean?
True, true, true. Were you not tempted to go like straight back there and start looking for other bits? Because you know exactly where it is.
It's funny you should say that because there's always been a few of us cooking up ideas about how to go back. I mean, we haven't. I mean, if I'm honest, if anyone could do it, me and a few mates probably could.
Yeah.
But we've not, no. But we have looked in depth into the logistics and what it would take to go back and do a bit of looting.
And you see, that leads us to a new show where we get to recall the name Foxy's Diamonds and they have a different twist.
There we go, and then I'm getting arrested.
Well, not necessarily. But like, what would you do though if you did activate that, which like you say, you've got the skill set, you've got the friends, you've got the knowledge, you know where it is, and you've actually done it before, right? So let's say you did put two and two together and actually, you know, got on with it, which I think you should do, and you did find genuine bona fide a pirate treasure that you could prove you had found and was yours and you were allowed to keep for whatever reason, so it's worth millions. What do you do? Do you keep it or do you cash in? And if you cash in, bearing in mind it's going to be millions, what are you spending it on?
Do I cash it in? I mean, what good is it? What good is it not cashed in? Or is it just about having that piece of whatever it is?
That's up
in
to
the
you,
house
isn't it?
As a talking point. I think I'd rather not cash it in because then I've got to go down the hole, what you're going to spend it on. I'd rather have whatever it is in a room and it gets dragged out when I'm struggling for conversation. And then I can use that as a piece to chat about.
Like an Olympic gold medal that people keep in their drawers, but then it's like, oh, you might as well see the medal now. We're having a bit of a lull in the conversation.
Precisely. I roll out a massive cannon that got dragged up from the bottom of the seabed.
Yeah, this was Purple Beard's. and I can prove it. It's worth yeah. 6 million, but I'm not cashing it in because I want to have a good chat with you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, this is all. I've done this for you. I could be a multi-millionaire, but I'm not. I'm here chatting to you.
I'm not. There we go. Yeah. Well, also, what sort of house guests do you have that you have a lull in conversation over? This is brilliant.
No, yeah, good point.
Just got like anyone's welcome. Just show up for a chat with Foxy. But if it gets boring, he'll bring out his pirate stuff. Watch out.
Yeah. If I start pulling out props, it means you've failed in the chat. Chat realms, in the realms of chat even.
I find it hard to believe that you would ever be at a loose end for conversations. The things you've seen and done and the people that you hang out with, you're always going to be able to pull out a tale, aren't you?
Well, I hope so, but we always dry up sometimes, don't we? You know, when it's like when someone says, oh, tell us a joke, you've probably got thousands of jokes, but you never manage to drag one out when actually the pressure's on.
Why was the sand wet?
I don't know, why was the sound wet?
Because the seaweed, it's all I can do. It's all I can do under pressure.
That is a dad joke.
Well, I'm a dad. I got three lads. I'm allowed to.
Well done. Yeah. Well done. That was good.
You can have that one. I mean, I imagine Rob's was slightly more on point than that, but you know, it's a start, yeah. Isn't it? But you're so right. No, there are times when you just kind of go a bit dry and that's life. Yeah. I have to ask you as well, because of all the sort of, because, I mean, let's be fair, you've done hostage rescues, you've done counter-terrorism, you've been protective security, you've done counter-narcotics missions. I mean, you've been there, done that, lived it. Have you got sort of superstitions in your life? Have you got certain things that you have to go to? I mean, we talked earlier about how if you've got to jump out into the darkness, you don't want that awareness of it. You don't want to know it's coming. But even on short notice, there must be certain things that you don't leave the house without doing, mentally or physically?
Not particularly. I will say that I don't know whether I've mentioned this to you before, but I've got a real thing about leaving the house in unironed clothes. I can't do it.
Really?
I have to. Yeah. Even if they don't look too bad, I've still got to run an iron over them. It's a real thing. And I've got to have a decent iron as well.
Now that is that military? That surely wasn't like...
It must be.
Foxy, you weren't like 8 years old going, hang on a sec, Mum, can you just give this a press?
100% I wasn't like that at 8. I wasn't like that at 15, so it must have been a military thing. It would have definitely been instilled into me. And so it's just become this thing. But the weird thing is I've got mates that are ex-military or still in. They're not like that. So I'm like, why have I been cursed with this got a iron fetish?
Yeah, that's, anyway, that is what it odd. Is. That is really, I mean, how much are we talking now? As in just the shirt, or are you pressing trousers? Are you ironing underwear? What, I mean, where does it stop?
It doesn't go as far as underwear, but it's everything, trousers, T-shirts. Sometimes if shorts are a bit too creased, they've got to get it as well. Yeah.
Is this because...
Shirts, obviously.
And T-shirts as well, presumably.
Yeah, T-shirts, 100%. They're probably the most ironed thing in the house. I like a crisp T-shirt.
They are, let's be fair, they're pretty tight on you. I've not seen you in a sort of rapper's baggy T-shirt before. The gun show is ever prevalent, isn't it?
I live my life by a motto, tight is right, loose is no use. You'll go far if you carry that. You go far if you carry that through life.
Tight is right, loose is no use.
Yeah, there we go.
Oh, the connotations on that one.
I know.
Absolutely fantastic. I feel like, you know, I mean, do you still drink, Jason, or have you given up the booze altogether?
I haven't given up, but I don't drink that much now. I've actually gone through a period of... So I, after the last, you know, the last lockdown we had?
Yeah.
That one at the end of the year, which was particularly grim because the weather was... Yeah, we all know. Mm. And Christmas was about. I actually drank quite a bit, not in a way that was an issue, but I drank a bit. I got a little bit sort of out of routine, and I felt pretty rough after New Year. And I was like, do you know what? I think I'm done with this, and I'm not going to drink. I'm not going to say I'm not drinking. I'm banning myself. But I said, right, I'm just not going to drink. I'm not going to sort of look at it. And I've done about, well, since then, since January, I haven't really drunk. I've, you know, I went to a wedding a couple of weekends ago. I drank there, but again, didn't have that much, and I was drinking water in between. And I feel all the better for it, and I've got myself into a really good. If you want to talk about sort of like superstitions and that, it's not superstition, but I've got routines and structure that is different to what I used to do back in the day.
Okay. So, what I mean, primarily just avoiding the booze and drinking a bit better.
Primarily avoiding the booze. Admittedly, I am going to go this evening to meet some friends and play darts at a place called Flight Club, and I'll probably have a couple of beers there.
But you're not supposed to talk about that, presumably.
Not talk about what?
First rule of Flight Club.
No, but that, no, no, is it? That's Flight Club.
I know.
I know. No, but now you're making me worried that there is a rule around Flight Club.
There should be.
Where they've copied Fight Club. Yeah, exactly.
There should be. If there's not, no. Yeah, that was, yeah.
But no, I think the structure and the routine is, you know, I'm up actually quite early in the morning, immediately have a cold shower.
Oh, come on. You're one of these Wim Hof lot, are you?
I'm not. I don't know. I mean, I interviewed him on my podcast a while ago, and I mean, the bloke is absolutely bonkers. He shouts at you. He shouted at me throughout the entire interview. Yeah, like every question I asked, he would shout the response, which is unnerving to begin with, but you sort of get used to it.
Okay. But, it's probably because he's still shocked. His entire life, he's in shock from that cold rush.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. But no, there was a few things I took from that. And then I spoke to a mate of mine that started doing it. And I was like, oh, I'm going to give it a go. And yeah, I became addicted to it. It's changed me, as in I've got a lot from it.
You see, I really struggle hearing that, Jason, because the trouble is that it's something that we can all do quite easily. Giving up the booze and so on, that's something we all have it within us, but a lot of people will not be kind of fond on that. But getting in a shower in the morning, which most of us should do, and turning it from hot to cold, it's kind of easy. It's what you have to
get.
I just can't bring myself to do it because I'm lazy.
Hard. You know, it's hard. Nah, you're not lazy. You just, you know, you just, if we always want the comfortable option. And on the, so when I first started doing it, I'd start with a normal temperature shower and then I'd ease into it and just turn it a little bit cooler. And, you know, you ease into it. But now it's straight to cold, straight in. And I don't really mind it. I actually enjoy it. And if I don't, on the odd occasion, I'll be like, I'll have a warm shower today. And I feel like I've cheated. And I actually get back in and have a cold shower. I feel like I've cheated myself.
That's fair enough. How long are these cold showers lasting, though? Because I get the sense that it'd be like, 20 seconds, yeah, I'm done. Don't need to shampoo today. We're all right.
Two minutes, 3 minutes. 3 minutes tops. But it decreases your getting ready time. It's great if you're in a rush.
Yeah. Well, it gives you more time for ironing, which is the best thing about
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
To get your nice tight shirts. I mean, come on, what's the actual benefit? What have you really genuinely felt? Because I know Wim says all kinds of stuff, but there's a lot of people that don't necessarily stand up to that when they say they've had a cold shower.
So I have one in the morning immediately when I get up, and I also have one immediately just before I get into bed. And the one in the morning wakes me up, and weirdly, the one in the evening sends me off big time.
That is crazy.
So I do feel invigorated in the morning, but the nighttime one, I think because you've been hot and sweaty through the day, so I feel clean. But then I'm going into mega weird detail, but once you've dried off and you get into your bed, you feel cozy. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, because everything's warm once you've been in a cold shower.
Yeah, and it gets, I'm just in a better place for sleep. And I used to struggle with my sleep. And I think some of that is to do with my ex-military days and, you know, PTSD probably has an impact on it. And I really did have issues with sleep and broken sleep. And this is honestly, it's been a game changer massively.
I should try it then.
It's worth a try. It does take a bit of doing. I didn't find it easy. Weirdly, you know, I spent most of my life in cold water because of the job I used to do. And yet having a cold shower is hard work. But once you go past the point of no return, whatever that is, we're all individuals, so it'll be a different time for everyone. But once you're through it, it's all right now.
3 weeks, I think, is the thing for me. Two or three times, that's still a gimmick. But if you're still doing it after 3 weeks, I reckon that becomes a habit.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just don't, just even the thought of it gives me chills. All right, so that's part of the new routine. So we got the cold showers in the morning and at night. That's a twist. Lack of booze, massively cut back. What else is in the routine?
Training. I'm religious with training. I make sure that I've got no excuses. There's always an excuse, but just get rid of it. You can always find time to do it. You could even do like a pyramid of press-ups in a very small space in a very short period of time. That's still a bit of exercise. Gets the endorphins going. It makes you feel better about yourself. And it gets you into a really good headspace.
Crikey. Yeah. All right. That's me told.
I was telling myself, if anything. But yeah, if anyone's listening and wishes me to tell them something, that's always a good thing.
These are useful. They're good takeaways.
You could stand up in a meter square and do squat jumps. And that gets, you know, that's firing quite a big muscle group in the body. That in turn has a massive effect on the rest of your body.
Yeah, fair dues, man.
A good thing.
I like it. Look, I know we're short on time. What's next for you? Because obviously Fearless 48 has been fantastic. And there's one to go on UK telly. Or, of course, you've got all four for the catching up of those two brilliant episodes. But what's next?
Yeah.
You must have plans.
What's next is the next bout of filming for SAS, which is I go away next week.
Wow. That's come around quick.
It hasn't. It feels like it has, but it's been over a year now because we normally go a bit earlier.
Okay.
As in like this month, September time, whereas now we're leaving beginning of October. So it's about a year.
Do you know what? I reckon it's the pandemic. I've lost track of time. Everything feels ages ago and yesterday.
Do you know what? Time is irrelevant because of the pandemic. And everything before the pandemic seems like a decade ago, doesn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, it really does.
For me, it does. Even when I'm thinking back to like February or March 2020, you know, as things were starting to change considerably, actually, that just seems like a lifetime ago.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the world was different and some people can't quite get their heads around that. We were all different and we've all been changed by it. Yeah.
Yeah, 100%. It's been a massive thing, a huge thing.
Crazy times, man. Well, let's hope we don't ever experience anything like that again in our lifetime, because that just
won't
be fun.
I hope not.
No. I've really enjoyed our chat. Once again, you're really good company. Thank you very much.
Likewise. You're a great interviewer, Andy. I enjoy it.
Oh, bless you. Thank you very much. Well, look, I mean, I used to live in Clapham, so if you ever fancy having a non-drink drink, let me know, because I'm in town.
I can always pull out the stops.
See, I can't. I have one. I haven't had a real drink for 3 years.
Have you not?
No.
Oh, right. We'll have a non-drink then. I'm more than happy with that. Sorry, I thought you meant if, you know, that you were up for having a drink.
I would be if I could handle it, but I'm too scared now.
Yeah, I think that's where I'm getting to now, though. I'm actually, you know, when someone says, oh, let's go and have a drink, I'm actually scared of having a good look at it.
Yeah. Yeah, it frightens me, to be fair. I'm like, the hangover is what I'm afraid of now. Not being drunk. I love being drunk, but no, the hangover, no.
Yeah, it is definitely. That's it, isn't it? It's that feeling afterwards that is more daunting.
Yeah,
I just can't be bothered with it anymore. It's just too. It has too much of an impact now. Back in the day, it was all right because you're young and you bounce back from it quick. Whereas now, it's just like a prolonged flogging.
I know it would floor me for about 3 or 4 days. A proper, like, if I properly got on it now, it would be so much recovery time. I can't think it would be worth it.
No.
Because the other thing is, I'd then love it. I'd love being drunk again. And then I'd be like, oh, I'd better do that again then. And then I'm just constantly hungover. Where's the fun in that?
I think those long hangovers are it's nature's way of helping you with your finances.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you say that. Thankfully, I know someone who I'm getting to know quite well now who knows where there's some pirate treasure. And he just so happens to have the skills to go and get it. So that'll sort me right out.
Yeah, we'll find a load of 400-year-old rum at the bottom of the ocean that we can...
Now, that I would try.
Delve into, exactly.
That I would try. I nearly bought a car at the weekend, which was a barn find discovered from 1976, and it had some 1976-year-old cognac and cigarettes in it.
Ooh. Did you know that the pirates, they used to be able to, if they were running out of rum, the skippers would start panicking, the captains, because... There was a song called Rums Out. Do you want me? I've got the lyrics to it. Do you want me to bring it up?
Of course.
Hang on.
Of course.
This is obviously from the guys themselves that I was with.
The professionals, the guys who know, have talked.
Professionals. This was something they found. It was written down, and it was sung by a captain called Bart Roberts. And it goes, Rums out, rogues applauding. Much talk of separation. Look sharp for a prize. Found one. Much rum aboard. All went well again. That is the rhyme that they used to sing. So basically, rums out, rogues applauding. Yeah. Much talk of separation is obviously, you know, mutiny.
Yeah, we're here for the booze.
Everyone's looking sharp for a prize. Found one. Much rum aboard. All went well again. Love that.
That's brilliant. That's brilliant. There's a mantra for life.
Yeah, there we go.
There's another possible tattoo option for you. There you go.
Yeah.
Love it.
Anyway, I digress.
Oh, I love a digression. It's all part of the fun, isn't it? Jason, what a pleasure. I really genuinely really enjoy our conversations. I think they're great.
Yeah, likewise. Cheers, mate.
Happy days, man. Listen, have a great rest of your day. Enjoy Flight Club, but don't tell anyone about it.
Yeah, I won't.
All right. Catch up soon, I hope, man. That was brilliant.
Yeah. Yeah, cheers, mate. Well, see you in a bit.
Take it easy. Bye-bye.
Bye.
The Andy J Podcast.
Thank you so much to Jason. What a top man. Oh, I always enjoy chatting with Foxy, and I'm sure it will happen again in the very near future. Thank you to you for listening. Don't forget, next week, it's Joe Wicks. And I can also share that we have some unbelievable stars lined up for this pod in the next few weeks. So if you haven't told your friends, if you're not a subscriber or a follower, depending on the platform you use, well, let's change that, shall we? Tell everyone. There's some really awesome guests coming up. And if you haven't dipped in our back catalogue yet, then please do. There are so many conversations waiting for you. I really hope you'll indulge yourself. Thank you very much for your company today. Have a brilliant week and make someone smile. I'll catch you on the flip side. Bye-bye.
The Andy J Podcast.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.